Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is Reset. Now, there was a big announcement today regarding Chicago Public Schools.
We began to inform our families and staff across Chicago Public Schools that we will begin the new school year learning at home and continue learning remotely for the first quarter, which ends on November 6th.
We will be building on the lessons we learned from the launch of remote learning this spring to create a more sustainable model.
That's CPS CEO Janice Jackson and Mayor Lori Lightfoot. After a lot of back and forth about hybrid learning, CPS will be all remote learning when school starts in September. There are a lot of questions about what that will look like. Education reporter Sarah Karp is here to help us unpack this info. Sarah, what changed?
According to Lightfoot and Janice Jackson and Allison Arwitty, who's the commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health, the science is showing that the data is showing that numbers of confirmed COVID cases are increasing. And so because they've been going up for the last couple of weeks, they feel like the chances are that, you know, we could be at 400, which is the benchmark they set for whether we'd be all remote or go mm-hmm. to do some hybrid learning. And what Arwitty said was that, you know, we're a school district, we're a big school district, and they decided they couldn't make the call as they had originally said, which about a week or two before school started, that they needed a month to plan. And because the trend looks like it's going that way, that they decided to be all remote. Now, you know, there was a bunch of drama with the Chicago Teachers Union mm-hmm. yesterday.
Right.
And they, you know, the Teachers Union saying that if CPS did not decide to go all remote, they could take a strike vote as early as next week. But Lightfoot said that had nothing to do with her decision to make the call right now.
Right. And the other interesting note, and we talked about this earlier this week, was just that, you know, there was parental feedback. There were a lot of parents with a lot of concerns, and it sounds like they heard overwhelmingly that parents wanted to go one way.
Not so much overwhelmingly, but what they did hear was that there was large portions of parents that were thinking that they were going to keep their kids home regardless of what CPS decided and do remote learning. So, you know, that was a factor that weighed in. And actually, this is just a hypothesis or a thought that I think actually Chicago Public Schools officials might have been a little surprised at how many people said that they were going to keep their kids home.
Yeah, right.
And that did, you know, cause them to rethink their plans. And I do think parents are sort of caught between this really difficult position, even right now. I mean, in just the last couple of hours, my like DM on Twitter and Facebook has been sort of blowing up with parents saying, help, now what do I do with my
children? What do I do, right?
So this is, you know, it's certainly not easy, and it's certainly not a uniform opinion. And, you know, I do think that that's going to be the big next question that the city needs to sort of step in and say, okay, if you can't stay home, what should you do with your child to make sure that not only they have some care, you know, they have somebody with them, but also that they're getting their work done, because, you know, you don't want to just send your kid to a childcare center where they play all day.
Yeah. And this is a complicated question. It's one that obviously plays out here in Chicago in several different ways. There's going to be the concern, as you just mentioned, about how do you actually deal with childcare or monitoring your children when you have to work, when you have to go physically into work. There's also the question of what remote learning looks like and addressing the digital divide. There are going to be a lot of, as many questions were on the other side when they were trying to bring kids back in this hybrid form, there are going to be as many questions on the other side as well.
Right. I mean, just today, Janice Jackson made it very clear that they want teachers to do live instruction every day, all day, basically for, you know, they didn't set a number of hours yet, but for several hours, she made it seem, and that principals are going to hold teachers accountable for doing this. Now, that's a big question, because does that really mean that you have to have a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old sitting in front of a computer for 5-6
right,
hours
right.
a day? I mean, I don't know if we really want this. So I don't know exactly what she was meaning. You know, live instruction could mean many things, but if your 5 or 6-year-old isn't sitting in front of the computer, who's monitoring what they're doing?
is there just sort of like a wait and see approach to what happens after the fall? Are they going to get concrete about that at a later time? Or, I mean, are they just really just talking about the short term foreseeable future?
So they said that they're going to do it till at least November 8th, which is the end of the first quarter. After that, they want to move into this hybrid plan. Now, I'm sure that's going to be dictated by whether the new cases are declining or still increasing, you know, whether they feel like they have some control over community spread. But one thing that they did do that's a little different than let's say, Los Angeles, which has also announced all remote learning, is that they did give like a date certain. So you can be sure it's going to be all the way through November 8th, whereas Los Angeles said, you know, we want to bring them back as soon as possible. Right. So, and that's a little more up in the year.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Anne, who's standing by in Hyde Park. Anne, welcome to Reset.
My question actually relates to the last piece about returning in November. Is in all of these news conferences and talking about the schools and all the back and forth, I was in my daughter's school in July dropping off a birth certificate, and the school looked as if everything had just been dropped in March and it was all in disarray. So I'm wondering, while we have all these weeks of remote learning and all these resources are being put toward remote learning, where are the resources for the buildings if we're actually going to reopen, like markers for 6 feet apart, lines for the desk?
Yeah, the infrastructure improvements. And thank you for that call, Sarah.
You know, this is the thing. Right now, the Chicago Public Schools has yet to release their budget for next year. And when they do release their budget, which has to be in the next week or two, they're going to have to talk about their capital budget. And I am going to be looking to see whether they're going to be spending some capital money on things like air purifiers or, you know, other things that might make buildings more safe. Because, yes, it is true that we're going to remote learning in the fall, but eventually we're going to need some of these things in place. So I think that will be a big question. You know, what can they do in the meantime to make buildings safer? Because a lot of teachers who were very much against going back to in-person learning, we're saying that the reason why they were so nervous about it is that they didn't feel like there'd been any infrastructure put in place to keep kids safe. So I think that's a question that the public school system and the mayor have to answer.
Speaking of teachers, let's bring in the president of the Chicago Teachers Union, Jesse Sharkey. Jesse, welcome back to Reset.
Hey, thanks for having me on. And hey, Sarah, good reporting work.
Jesse, what's your reaction to the press conference and the news this morning?
We're glad the mayor's walked away from the plan to force students back into schools. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been looking and talking about the numbers going in the wrong direction for a couple weeks now, a few weeks. And one of the problems with not only just the health risks, but also all the time that we spent denying the picture that everyone else could apparently see, was time that took away from our ability to make remote learning more planful and more enriching for every CPS student.
You're in that position now where the transition starts, and teachers will be, as we heard from the mayor and from Janice Jackson, the CEO, saying there will be accountability from the principal. Teachers may be, and we don't really know what the time lengths are, be teaching hours on end when it comes to remote learning. How do you get your teachers ready for that, and how do you negotiate with the city to make sure that that's all on the up and up?
Well, I think we expect to work hard and to do the planning work and the things that teachers often do in the summer to be ready when school starts. This year it's going to be remote. It's going to mean that people are going to have to go back and examine their practice, probably get new equipment in their homes, and do all the stuff that we have to do to be ready for that. I do think there's a number of real equity issues for students and families. You know, we have to figure out how to make sure we get devices. Probably there should be a voluntary program for some house visits, go and do a social distance visit, stand on people's stoops to make sure they have the right equipment. We need to make sure, especially in the parts of the city where COVID has hit the hardest, where there's some real equity and collaboration with the students, the families, and the people who have to do the work in schools.
There's so much made of of balancing, and this is a complicated issue. But as we swing to a remote or only learning environment, what at the teachers' union, you think about people who may not have childcare, who may have essential work and have to go into a physical space and leave kids behind. What does the teachers' union say about the fact that part of it is still a big pressing issue for many Chicagoans?
Yeah, totally. It's an important point. One of the things that we've said is that obviously remote learning is a pale substitute for in-person learning. There's a lot of services that get delivered to the school, and I know at the mayor's press conference today they talked about delivering meals, but that's only part of it because, you know, there are either therapeutic and clinical services that get delivered to students. You know, there's obviously in-person learning has a whole number of benefits. So, you know, when the science supports it, you know, we're in favor of resumption of in-person school. But the other thing to say is that we've got depression-era unemployment rates and, you know, skyrocketing levels of violence in the city. And we just think that the mayor's policies need to address the needs of communities. I know the Congress is stalled right now on things like basic income support, you know, support for people who are facing eviction, a broader set of, you know, common good issues. Our union's been pretty active in trying to advocate for those things because we recognize that you don't have public schools without communities of parents, and right now a lot of working class people in the city are suffering.
Jesse, yesterday you guys mentioned that you would take a strike vote if you had to, essentially to push back on any sort of in-person hybrid plan. Now that we've moved to remote only, are you optimistic that you and the mayor and the CPS and everyone can come back together at the table and do this in a more organic way for the parents and the kids here in Chicago, that we're not having the fights after a plan is announced, that you're actually getting together before it's announced?
Yeah, I hope so. You know, when I was thinking back, you know, yesterday, you know, after the news broke that CPS was, in fact, going remote, there was a flood of emotion, and I felt like crying. And then I realized that, you know, I had spent the last 4 weeks battling over something which, you know, I should have been accomplished, you know, by us listening to each other and, looking at the facts as they were coming in. And that would have been extra time that we could have spent planning for remote learning. Mm-hmm. That's what we have to do now. I think we're going to continue talking at the table, and we hope that teachers' voices, because teachers are ultimately the ones that have to make remote learning really work, it's going to be effective.
Yeah.
And it will be better than the spring. We're going to come into it more prepared, with more devices in a more planful way. And, I think that's our challenge.
Yep. Chicago Teachers Union President Jesse Sharkey. Jesse, thanks for making time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Let's go to Maria, who's standing by in Lincoln Square. Maria, welcome to Reset.
My question is, teachers will be physically present in the school classrooms and do their lessons live, so our kids who are at home can interact with them and can have the questions directly answered, and that's how kids can have semi-interactions among themselves. My next question is, I'm an essential worker. I'm an immigrant. My English is not a first language. Who is going to help with my kids to get the high-quality education while I'm providing my public service to the public?
That's a great question, Maria. Thank you for your call. Maria just nailed it. I mean, how do you give that extra support and that care and attention that a lot of our students need in this new environment?
Right. And by the way, in some senses, now teachers are essential workers, because CPS officials did say that they want teachers to do more live instruction. And that means that they could be in their school or they could be at home, but they should be doing live instruction and interacting with kids, which is, I think, something that was lacking a bit in the spring, mm-hmm. and the parents want now. But it also means that the teacher who's got three kids of her own at home can't be sitting there, you know, making sure that they're staying on task at the same time.
Right.
I mean, we can't expect that person to be shuffling everything. So I do think there's going to have to be some infrastructure put in for people who just can't, you know, devote the time because they have to be at work. Now, actually, somebody asked me, and I don't know this answer, but they would like to see an evening school option for some kids, yeah. because, you know, maybe that's when parents can actually sit with their kids.
Wow.
And maybe they want to leave their children with their parents during the day or something like that. And they don't want to tell their parents that now you have to, not only do you have to take care of my kid all day, but you have to do school all day. And so then, you know, could they shift to the evening? I don't know the answer to that question. It seems like that would be a little difficult. But
yeah, but it's but all ideas on the table at this point, as we are in an unprecedented era. I mean, it's something to consider. I, as a parent myself, just hearing that, I perk up, saying maybe that's a better time, because a lot of times we're in school so parents could go to work. And if that's right. not necessarily the way it is right now in 2020, then maybe we rethink the whole thing.
I mean, if you think about high schoolers, they probably don't wake up. I mean, if they're at home, making them wake up by noon is probably a difficult thing. And if the parent isn't home to force them to get up, that's a difficult thing. So I feel like even for like high schoolers, even though they might not need the hand-holding that little kids need, they do need somebody to, you know, tell them like...
Yeah, structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. WBEZ education reporter Sarah Karp is with us. We're continuing the conversation. Maria from Lincoln Square made another point I thought about in the break, was just about teachers are obviously, are they going to have to go to the classroom and pretend like they're doing school with everybody in the classroom, or are they going to be able to work from home?
So today, Janice Jackson said that teachers can come to the classroom if they want to. So it sounds like that's an optional thing. Mm.
That's an interesting idea, just thinking about that over the idea of coming into work. But that is something that might add some structure to it.
Mm-hmm, for yeah. sure. And also, you know, one thing that teachers complained about is not having all the equipment that they needed in the springs, you know, to do live mm-hmm. instruction. Mm-hmm. So, and even some of them, you know, their internet wasn't so great at home. And so, you know, if your internet's not so great, then that affects your students. Now, I don't know if all schools have great internet either, but at least there's a better chance, perhaps.
As we look at those questions, the easy questions about Wi-Fi, and we start talking about putting kids online and on video chats and other things for 6 to 8 hours a day, if that's even possible, I would just assume that even someone who is high-speed internet and paying the gold standard is going to have trouble with that. I mean, are they thinking about that at all, the idea of doing this kind of remote learning and the stress that it puts on the households, not just people who we talk always about the digital divide, but just this idea that this is not how any of this infrastructure was supposed to play out?
Right. I mean, that's something that I heard a lot from teachers this spring, was that, you know, the kid would be on 1 second and then would be off. And I mean, even you and I, we've been on Zoom calls, I'm sure, yep. where, you know, suddenly the person slows down and then they're gone for a few minutes and then they come back. And all those are complications that I'm sure people are thinking about. I mean, I do think that these issues of how to get kids really being able to be engaged consistently through remote learning and how difficult it is the reason why Janice Jackson and Chicago Public Schools administrators really wanted to do hybrid learning. I mean, just like Jesse Sharkey said, in-person learning is by far better than remote right. learning. And I just don't think that some of these barriers are going to be overcome. And, you know, that's just something that we're going to have to live with.
Yeah. So I know a lot of parents are facing two worries, really, if you think about it, their family's health and the realities of childcare and remote learning. And I want to play a clip from Mayor Lightfoot, who earlier this morning addressed that.
No one should have to choose between work and whether their child will have the resources that they need to thrive. And we will make sure that that is not a choice that has to happen.
Yeah. Okay. Now saying that they're going to make sure that that's a choice they don't have to happen. But as we even talk and people call in, it is a choice. It's going to be something that's not ideal. That's where we're at with COVID-19 in 2020. But there will be a choice. So what does she mean by the fact that that's something that she's going to make sure that doesn't happen?
So she did say that they're working with community groups to come up with some plan. There also could be, there was a suggestion during the press conference that maybe schools could be open for some kids with the principal there sort of monitoring them doing remote learning. Maybe that could be on the table. I think that what the school district right now has said is, and the city, is that, you know, they're exploring options, but they're going to have to come up with something pretty quickly. You know, it's got to be soon. I mean, this is only a couple weeks before school starts and people need to know what they're going to be doing. I also do think that parents will become creative. You know, you've already heard about a lot of parents talking about these like homeschool pods.
Yeah, right.
Will, you know, will people get together and say, okay, I can be home on Monday monitoring schoolwork for my child and five of his friends, and Tuesday they're all going to go here, and Wednesday they're all going to go here, and Thursday. And I think that, you know, that will happen. Maybe some people who have money will hire tutors to monitor that work. I hope that that everybody uses their creative juices in this thing, because, you know, maybe you could get some people who are, you know, recent college graduates who can't find work to work through community organizations to form those type of pods for, you know, people who don't have money, you know, who are lower income. But that's just my idea.
But it's not just that. It's also parents and it's students and teachers, everyone having to rethink what they did in the spring to be emergency to the actual new normal and new reality. And it makes me, I mean, even my household, I ordered a desk. You know, I think from IKEA, but the idea being that we're going to restructure the way that my son, you know, did his schooling. Before it was maybe sitting at the kitchen table, but now we recognize this is much more long term and he has to have a space. So that's the thing. I think everybody's going to have to start thinking differently about their households, their routines, their habits, all that kind of stuff. Let's bring in a teacher. Let's bring in Ray Salazar, who is a teacher at Hancock College Prep. And Ray, it's always great to have you on the program and back on WBEZ because we worked together a long time ago. But Ray, your thoughts as a teacher to the decision this morning by CPS?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Lisette and Justin. You know, I think it's the right decision for students and for staff and for families. You know, the data is clear. Dr. Irwadi completely communicated that today, and this is really the best decision that's going to help our city move forward and overcome this, hopefully. And, you know, I'm hoping that this is a short-term plan and that, you know, by November or by early next year, we'll be back to the new normal.
Yeah, and Sarah and I were just talking about this, about teachers having to prepare differently than they did in the spring. How are you preparing to do remote-only learning at Hancock? Because you teach high school students.
Yeah, I teach high school. And, you know, I think that the one misconception I want to address is that people think that, oh, well, teachers have it easy, you know, and no, remote learning is not easy. And it's and working this way, teaching this way is not easier. I think the questions I'm focusing on right now, a month before school starts, is really what matters the most in terms of learning. I'm looking at my curriculum plans and figuring out what do I need to pull out, what do we focus on, and then how do I engage students in meaningful ways, because students deserve a high-quality learning experience. And as teachers, we have to fulfill that commitment.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, do you have to rethink, because, you know, it was an emergency situation in March and April, into May, and CPS all the way into June. But the idea, do you rethink what you did then to what you're going to do coming up here in September?
Oh, completely, completely. You know, and in casual settings, I've been getting together with my teacher friends, and we've been talking about things to do differently. Look, March, it was a mess. You know, we schools closed, and we were going to be out for 2 weeks, and we gave students assignments, and, you know, my students looked at me like, yeah, Salazar, sure, yeah, we'll do these assignments, knowing that, yeah, they were not going to do it. I knew that. And then all of a sudden, April comes in, and we're like, whoa, this is for real now. We had no training, no idea about how to do this, and we were just thrown into this. So we did the best that we could, and we learned a lot. I think a lot of the teachers are really spending time figuring out how to use all types of Google extensions, how to recreate learning experiences. You know, in my class, so even though it's English class, we do a lot of cutting, a lot of gluing, a lot of reorganizing of information. I need to figure out a way to redo that and how to work with it. One of the things that I really liked is that Dr. Jackson talked about small groups, and I think that's really key. I think teachers need to move away from the idea of looking at 30 students on their screen at one time and really figuring out how can we use small groups more effectively and really rethink what learning looks like.
Ray, when you're teaching kids at the 11th and 12th grade, And they're having to go through this, and you're going to have to, you know, usher in a whole new, unprecedented way of learning. What do you get from them? What's the reaction from the students who are in your classroom or virtual classroom at this point?
I have to give credit to my students from last year, who they just went with it, you know, and they did the best that they could. They worked hard. And, you know, I tell people that some of the writing that I saw from my students during that the spring pandemic when we were out of school was much better than the writing that I saw when we were in school. Mm. I think it comes down to students finally had to trust themselves. And I wasn't there to look over every paragraph that they wrote. And so they just had to do it. And so it built their confidence that way. You know, I give it up to students who are dealing with, you know, all kinds of complex family issues. And, you know, the other thing is that people are so surprised by the challenges that, students face with, you know, low-income situations or insecure housing. And, you know, I'm looking at this and saying, these are issues that low-income Black and brown families have been facing in our city for generations. Like, our families learn how to deal with this and push through. And I think some of the most impressive success stories are from students who are facing difficult circumstances because they find ways, because of the value system that's at home, to persevere. Now, you know, I also want to say that with that doesn't mean that we should just step back and let things happen. We need to make sure that we go out of our way for students facing difficult circumstances.
Yeah. Ray Salazar, a teacher at Hancock College Prep on the Southwest Side. Ray, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you.
Sarah Karp with us as well, WBEZ education reporter. I want to bring in Natalie Espana. She's an incoming senior at Lane Tech High School in Lakeview. Natalie, thanks so much for joining us.
Hello.
So, Natalie, what's your reaction to the decision this morning to make it remote only for the fall?
I was so relieved because as of things are right now, I see that the cases are rising. Mm-hmm. And Lane Tech is a very big school, very, very big. And it worried me because imagine over 1,000 students crammed into one hallway.
Yeah,
that
right.
would be dangerous for the students who have underlying health issues that cannot afford to get sick because it will cost them their lives. And I know people who have contracted COVID, and it's not pretty. Yeah. It's not fun to have. And I've seen how it can deteriorate a person both mentally and physically. And I do not wish that upon anyone.
Obviously, for the health concerns are front of mind for you. As someone who, as a junior, was able to do the remote learning in the spring, are you excited about doing remote learning again? What was good about it and what was bad about it?
I'm curious as to how things are going to be different because, as the previous teacher said, March was a mess. April, May was an even bigger mess, especially with AP exams. And I took four. And I want to know how things are going to be more productive because I feel like the previous teacher also said, like, we weren't taking this seriously in March because we're like, oh, it's just 2 weeks. You know, we're going to be back to school. Everything's going to be back to normal. But it's August and things have not changed. I would like to see teachers actually giving presentations and lectures, you know, with like the board and like actual presentations, prezis, to teach kids, you know, through online, because I feel like that would be most productive, especially for AP courses, because we're the ones that need to really cram up before May.
Mm-hmm. Natalie, as you think about going into your senior year, this isn't what you thought it was going to be. There's a lot of things that go with being a senior in high school. Are you just kind of taking it in stride?
I really just got to go with the flow on this one. There's a lot of things I was looking forward to my senior year. I was looking forward to go back to my club and to actually, you know, put things into action that we were planning junior year that did not happen because of the pandemic. You know, I was looking forward to prom. I don't know if I'm going to have one. You know, homecoming, you know, the pep rallies, you know, saying goodbye and hanging out with friends for the last year, you know, having lunch with your friends, you know, hanging out around the school. Like, I'm going to miss that. And I hope I get to go back in spring, but the way things are going, I don't see that happening.
Well, we're optimistic. Natalie Espana, incoming senior at Lane Tech High School. Natalie, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Sarah Karp, who's with us. I mean, when you hear Natalie and you hear Ray talk about these, I mean, you recognize how complicated all of this is. And again, there's no right answer. It's just the way that we kind of, I guess, follow Natalie's advice and go with the flow.
Right. I think that's what we're all learning to have to do, to let go and go with the flow.
Yeah, right.
So.
Sarah Karp, WBEZ's education reporter. Thanks so much for joining us today on this. What a day for Chicago Public Schools as they go remote only for the fall. The decision made this morning, late last night, but the players were on stage today this morning. Sarah, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that's today's Reset. Want more great conversations like this? Subscribe to the podcast or tell your smart speaker to play WBEZ's Reset. I'm Justin Kaufman. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you right back here tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.